Julie Clark, and I'm a nurse practitioner practicing in Macon at the Crescent House, which is a child advocacy center. And I'll talk more about that when we get into the presentation. Kiana and I both worked on this together, and so she had to present Dr.'s pick, so I'm presenting ours. The disclaimers we talked about before, we have nothing to disclose. Characteristics of adult sexual assault and the importance of research on the adolescent sexual assault. As she presented before, it's a serious crime and it causes a cycle of victimization and re-victimization. And also this victimization leads to short and long-term consequences. All the time in my practice I see where sexual assault of an adolescent, and the mother's given me the medical history, and the mother says, well, this happened to me. So the cycle continues, and so we need to really figure out these children that are at risk and what we can do to prevent the cycle, to break the cycle. This just lists some long-term consequences, self-destructive behaviors. We see kids that do not get counseling, and they have long-term consequences such as drinking, substance abuse, promiscuity. They also have self-destructive behaviors. We see cutting a lot. They used to cut on their arms, but then they got word that we look at their arms, so now they cut on their waist and their inner thighs. So you kind of have to look at the whole body when they come in. They might have sleep disorders or anxiety that are when they're triggered, or just general anxiety disorder. And short-term consequences can be regressive sleep behaviors, eating disorders, and we were talking about another study that we want to do concerning that. And then non-participation in school activities. They tend to isolate themselves and withdraw from everything. So that these are factors that they need to get counseling. A lot of times the parents will say, well, I think they're doing okay, and I don't know if they need counseling. But especially if it's before puberty that something like this occurs, when puberty hits, these kids go crazy, and it just resurfaces and kind of comes out full-blown. So they need counseling. This just shows victims of adolescent sexual assault plus no interventions such as counseling, medical exam, law enforcement involvement can equal the increased likelihood of being raped or physically abused as an adult. These kids, once this happens to them, a lot of these kids have low self-esteem. And they just don't value their bodies. A lot of them will even turn to making themselves look unattractive so nobody will do this to them again. We feel like the identification of the causes of victimization and the characteristics of the victim and appropriate interventions focused on the well-being of the victim will break the victimization cycle. The background is victims of adolescent sexual assault during adolescence are at higher risk of self-destructive behaviors, which we had alluded to, or mental health issues as adults. Our study aim was to replicate the two previous studies, one of which Kiana went over, which was the 1992-93 study by Muir et al., and the other one was one done in 2001 by Dr. Speck et al. The aim was to determine themes leading to adolescent sexual assault, and so we can come up with some preventions. The method, we did data extraction from records from the place that I worked, the Crescent House in Macon. We included female victims of sexual assault ages 13 to 17, and we excluded male victims and females less than 13 or greater than 17. We collected the data through a retrospective chart review from June 2012 to 2013, and this research was compared to those other two studies. Both of the other two studies looked at adolescents and adults, and we just looked at adolescents because we're a child advocacy center. We only see kids up to that age. So we did not include the adults. This is where I work. It's a Crescent House is in Macon. We are serviced through the medical center, Navicent Health, which we are the only hospital base. So we are through the hospital. We're not a standalone. We have forensic interviews, forensic medical exams, crisis intervention and support. We do community education through, we host the Darkness to Light program in the community, and we also have a symposium once a year in April. It's a child abuse symposium because that's Child Abuse Awareness Month. We have multidisciplinary case management, which we do multidisciplinary team meetings every other Friday, and we refer for mental health therapy. Our goal is to one time have everything under one roof, but we don't have that right now. We see 600 to 700 children a year, which is kind of astounding. We have three interviewers, and I'm the only nurse practitioner, and we have a medical director that also helps out. But probably I do 300 to 400 exams a year. So that's our center. Characteristics examined in this study, these are all listed. We looked at all of them, the age, the race, the history of prior pregnancy, history of previous assault, abduction, weapon, known, was the perpetrator known or a stranger, did they use force, number of perpetrators, victim sustained physical injuries, history of victim being diagnosed of having a developmental disability, intercourse occur, type of intercourse, whether it's vaginal or non-vaginal, did they use bribery, and post-assault diagnosis of STI, and the post-assault diagnosis of pregnancy also. Okay, this is, Kiana did these slides, so she set it up a little differently than Dr. Speck, and that Dr. Speck had all the, we thought it would explain it better in the bar graphs, because you can actually see the three different studies. The first study is the light green, the second study is the dark green, and our study is the one in gold. The number of chart reviews, you see they had a lot more, and we only had 58, so of course our study had a different number. The average age across the years is a little decreased, but not much. It went from 15.2 to 14.1. So in our study, that was the average age was 14.1. Caucasian and African American, all that was not statistically significant in any of the studies. So we had pretty much the same ratio. Prior pregnancy, we only had in our study one prior pregnancy, so it was a lot lower in our study. Previous sexual assault was lowest in the 1992 study, and was the most in the middle study, the 2001. Physical injuries, and I want to say just a little bit about physical injuries. It was lowest in our study, but like Kiana talked about, the delayed reporting. Adolescents tend to delay their reporting. A lot of them won't report. And if you work in sexual abuse and you do these physical exams, you know that injuries go away. So when you get this happened a year ago, you're not going to see any injuries. When you get this happened a month ago, you're not going to see any injuries. So there may have been injuries if they had reported immediately, but within a week, all those injuries are gone. I always explain to the parents, especially in the vaginal area, it's like the inside of your mouth, and just like if you bite the inside of your mouth and you have a sore, it goes away within a couple of days, the same thing down there. So if they don't report in a good amount of time, then you're not going to see any injury. And that could be the reason that we have a lower amount of physical injuries. Intercourse, penetration, oral, anal, or vaginal. Okay. And there was no significant differences in that. And non-vaginal, that it was increased in the current study. We have a lot of kids that come in, and perpetrators talk about the grooming aspect. The offender does not want the child to tell. So they're going to do things to keep the child coming back. So they bribe the child. They'll give them iPhones. They give them clothes. They give them drugs. They give them alcohol. They are fulfilling a need that their parent is not fulfilling. So if they don't get love from their parent, they're going to find it somewhere. So these perpetrators are out there, and they know that they're going to provide that need. So that's what they're doing. So the grooming behaviors, a lot of times they know what hurts and what doesn't hurt, so they'll do things that don't hurt, that feel good, so that child will come back. Post-assault diagnosis of pregnancy was not looked at in the first two studies, and it was looked at in ours. And the post-assault diagnosis of STI was not looked at in those other two studies. Known perpetrators, of course, was that's the big thing. These are not people walking down the street in trench coats. These are people in our families, our coaches, our teachers, our friends. So the known perpetrator, it went up. The use of bribery was not looked at in the first two studies, but it was in ours. And like I said, they bribe them with anything. Use of a weapon went way down in ours. And they don't use weapons anymore. They use bribery. It gets them further. Use of force went way down in ours, and I think that's just across time that, you know, now the perpetrators are getting smarter to what the kids will let them do. One perpetrator, we see a lot of one. We don't see a lot of multiples. The current study indicated more victims with known assailants, like we said, and fewer reporting any kind of physical force or use of a weapon. They're increasing their use of bribery, like I said, because the kids like it more, they'll come back more. Decrease of use of force. They're bribed with all kinds of things, money, food, toys. And these are implications for prevention. Primary, we're educating adolescents in healthy friendships and relationships, educating children and youth on grooming strategies so they can recognize them. A lot of these mothers that come in and they say, my boyfriend wouldn't have done that. Mother's 40, she's got three girls, and a 28-year-old wants to date a 40-year-old. I mean, that should be a red flag anyway. She's got three daughters. He's going after the daughters. He's not there for her. So, I mean, they pick them out. Educating children on good touch, bad touch, and educating parents and guardians on how to protect their children. Screening for sexually abused children and adolescents in schools, emergency departments, and primary care offices. So if we know the risk or the teens that are at risk, we can pick them out and try to protect them. Forensic interviewing and medical exams of children and adolescents suspected of being abused as a secondary. And the tertiary is counseling. Most kids need counseling after something like this has happened to them. And the medical treatment is necessary. And that's our references. All right, and I guess we'll do questions after everybody.
Thank you.